Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 9th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Oh, not too much. Chilling on Sunday here. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I wish I had been able to go outside and enjoy this beautiful weather. This was a beautiful day. I'm sure all the people at the baseball games that were outdoors this weekend had a great time, except for the rainy days. There was one rainy day.
There was one rainy day, yes, but it was indeed a beautiful day in Tokyo. It felt like spring. And then the other day when I was out at Seibu Dome, it felt like a little bit like rainy season had come already. But you know, it was the sort of like, excuse me, pre-rainy season rain, like a little trailer.
I gotcha.
The rainy season. Okay, here's a little rain. Just get used to this. You're going to see it a lot pretty soon.
Right, all right. Well, we're going to talk a lot about the Marines and Jason Standridge of the Marines, who's our guest this week. And we're going to talk about another collision or another couple of collisions that happened at home plate and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, I went out to QVC Marine Field last week to talk to Jason Standridge, and you know, Jason's great. He's really pitched well, and he's really happy being in Chiba. I think he was a little nervous leaving because he loved Fukuoka. All the guys who play for the Hawks love Fukuoka. He'd lived in Fukuoka, he'd live in Kansai, and moving to Chiba was a bit of a, you know, sort of a new frontier for him.
Mm.
But apparently his wife and his family settling in quickly, and he's doing well, and he's the nicest guy, so you really are happy. We're all happy to see that. Now, he's got 6 quality starts in 7 games, you know, although, and that translates to a 2-3 record.
That happens.
It does happen.
Wins are fickle.
Yes. The Marines have scored a lot of runs, and we'll hear what he has to say about that. He's got a 2.08 ERA with the Marines. He's in his 9th season in Japan. He pitched 1.5 years with the SoftBank Hawks in 2007 and 2008. Then he was a year in the States before returning in 2010 with the Central League's Hanshin Tigers, where he was part of a very productive quartet of Standridge, Randy Messenger, Matt Merton, and Craig Brazell. Well, at least for 2010, they were awesome.
Right.
Okay. The last year of the flying ball. And Jason was very generous to share his time with us, so let's hear what he has to say and his thoughts on life and Chiba and everything. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is longtime NPB pitcher Jason Standridge, the guy we're going to just rip into mercilessly this week.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
they always say that first. Okay, anyway, I can't count how many times you've been on the show. It's got to be about 6 times. And now, so maybe your 6th show, your 3rd team, you're this year with the Chiba Lotte Marines, and your 4th stint, I guess, in NPB. So does it ever get old?
I think it can get old if you treat it like a job.
Okay.
I think, as I've gotten older, I've definitely noticed that it is more like a job. You know, it's more of a, this is what I do to provide for my family, you know, of course, you know, but, I still treat it like a game, and it's still fun. It's still fun for me to go out and compete.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when it ceases to be fun, and then when it ceases to be, fun to go out and compete and go out there and try to win, you know, that's when I'm not going to do it anymore. And so I think that right now it's still that way. I don't know. Me and my wife have talked about this being my last year, you know, but I don't know. I really don't know. I can't tell you for sure, but it's been a lot of fun, you know. So I've really enjoyed this year, and I'm trying to soak in every bit of it if it is my last one. And so, just enjoying myself.
Well, so far, so good. I have to go back to what you said about, you know, baseball being a business and realization. At what point, you know, in your career, obviously when you're starting out, you're thinking, you know, I want to pitch in the majors, mm-hmm. I want to pitch in the World mm-hmm. Series. And at what point did you think, was it people told you, you know, you have to look out for yourself? Or at what point was there a realization, was it kind of sudden, you know, I got to do this for me and for my family? Was it?
You know, I don't know if there was ever a... If there was ever a point, I think your priorities change when you get married, when you have kids,
right.
You know. And I think it, you know, at first, you know, when you're young, you're like, hey, I want to get to the big leagues, I want to make some money, and you know, and I don't know if necessarily there was like this defining moment or whatever for it to change, but it's just I feel like your priorities start to change when you get married, you have kids, and it's just more of like it's about them, it's not about you, you know. And so even though they still follow me around and it's all about me because it's like we're working on my schedule, but it's a kind of a unique schedule, you know. And so my kids have gotten to experience a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife have been able to experience a lot of things, you know, coming to Japan. And, you know, I have gotten to play in the big leagues, and I have been able to get that taste of that, you know. And so all of that wrapped up, I never, ever would regret coming here at all. You know, I feel like it was the best thing that ever happened to me in my career. And, you know, and I've got a little girl at home that wouldn't be calling me daddy if I never came to Japan. And so, so I'm very, very blessed and very, very thankful.
She might not be calling you a Tosan.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay. Now, let me ask, you know, as you talked about the joy of playing, you know, and you know, what makes it fun, I have to ask, what did you learn this year? What did you, you know, every year is part of the joy is that you learn, you meet new people, you learn new things. What did you pick up the last 12 months that you thought, wow, how come I didn't know that one before?
You know, I feel like the older I've gotten, I've started to not worry about the results as much.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when you're young, you want to do well. I still want to do well. I mean, obviously I want to do well. I don't go out there to lose, you know. And I don't go out there and pitch not to lose. I go out there and pitch to win, you know. And I go out and I take pride in working hard. I take pride in getting my body prepared, especially off season as well, you know. And so even during the season, but I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to figure out really how to answer your question. I don't know.
Was there anything that you thought, how come I didn't figure this out?
Yeah, I guess it's just more. I think it's just more of not worrying about results as much.
Other than this result you're working on right now, this
It's more of like when I simplify things, I'm a lot better. Right. When I start trying to complicate things or whatever, and start thinking about too much stuff, it's when I don't do very well. But when I simplify things, obviously my wife would tell you I'm not a multitasker, you know, and so most men are struggle with multitasking or whatever. But and I think
don't put all the other guys in there.
I think that you know, for me, when I can simplify pitching and I can simplify, I'm gonna throw a pitch down in the zone, a quality pitch down in the zone, and whatever happens after that, I have no control over. But maybe early on, maybe worrying too much about results, too much about I got to do good, I got to be successful. Now it's just like I'm going to go out there and I'm going to pitch, and if I'm successful, awesome. If I'm not, then I got kids and a wife that still love me, and I'm not worried about failing. I'm not scared of failure. And so I think early on, that was like a case. I think I pitched a long time in the States and even the big leagues, pitched scared and kind of pitched not to get sent down to the minor leagues or you know, not to give up a hit, and you know, and just I just learned more to pitch to contact, more to like, hey, I'm gonna throw the ball to the plate, and it's his job to hit it, but I'm gonna make him mishit it, and I'm gonna get him out, you know, and so. Just trying to simplify things, and I feel like just not, you know, I feel like not caring is a word that people don't really understand. Like, but you have to have some sort of a not care attitude, but still have a caring attitude, if that makes sense.
Care what you're doing, but not be too overly concerned.
Exactly.
The way not the ball bounces.
Overly concerned about the results.
Okay.
And I think just. The fear of failure is something that I feel like I learned not to worry about. Don't worry about failure. And, you know, that's why I stress to my son about that. And I feel like that's such a life lesson that don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to try something. And if you think that you're going to fail, don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to try it, because you might fail. But you know what? So what? At least you tried. At least you went. You know, so I feel like there's a lot of life lessons in baseball, obviously, you know. But I feel like that's something I've learned. I feel like it's something I've learned. And I don't know if I would say over the past 12 months.
Okay.
But I would say over my career, I've learned to deal with that on a better level.
Okay. Yeah. Now, obviously, you learned a few things moving to Chiba, and you got a new team. This is your third team. You've been with the Hawks twice, the Tigers, and now the Marines. Now, if you had to sort of like describe, what's it like to play for the Marines that was different from the Tigers or the Hawks?
I would say with these guys, great camaraderie. Great chemistry in the clubhouse. These guys enjoy playing with each other. But you know, we had that with SoftBank too. Mm-hmm. We had some really good. We had good chemistry. Guys knew that they were good, and we knew as a team we were good. And so we'd lose a game, it would be like, okay, so what? We're going to win tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, so that attitude is something that good teams have. Mm-hmm. When I was with the Tigers, I feel like it was a lot of pressure, and I feel like just. I mean, it's a storied franchise. I mean, there's just a lot of pressure there, and guys sometimes have a hard time dealing with that. Mm-hmm. And that was that whole thing about not being afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that some of those guys should take that and say, like, you know what? I can't be afraid if I go out there. I can't be afraid to fail. I can't be afraid to go out there and do the best I can. And, you know, if we lose, we lose, you know. But with them, it was more it was the seventh game of the World Series, and when we lost, and you're like, dude, we got a game tomorrow, man, and we got 100 more, you know, like it's not. So I think the guys took it a little bit. There's nothing wrong with taking things serious, you know, when you're out there doing your work, but once the game's over, it's over. You analyze your mistakes, you analyze them, but you do a quick analysis, and then you get over it, and you realize the things you did good, and you focus on the things you did well, and then that moves you on to the next day or whatever.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you. Now you had a really nice game yesterday, and the team, the Marines are scoring runs like crazy. That's got to be fun when you go. Does that change when you pitch? And obviously, you said there are things you can't control, but it's got to be a lot easier when they're scoring 4 or 5 runs a game.
Yeah, I mean, in my case, we haven't been scoring 4 or 5 runs a game. So, but it's been nice when we do score some runs, because as a pitcher, obviously, you want to win. You know, my job is to go deep in the game to keep my team in the game to give them a chance to win. I don't necessarily have to have wins myself, you know, but for me to go deeper into the game, give my team a chance to win at the end or whatever. So I feel like I'm doing my job, but the team is scoring some runs. I mean, and I think we have a great team. And I think if once they really believe that, most of these guys, if they believe that we got a good team, I think that we're going to be even better. But being able to score runs is obviously better for a pitcher, obviously.
Okay. I ask you to sort of go into your, to look into the thing, your thought process when you're on the mound. And obviously, when you're pitching to win, let's say, if you've got a one-run game and it's the fifth inning, you know, you got a runner on second, do you pitch differently than when it's a 3-run game?
That depends on the situation.
Okay.
That's situation. Yeah, that's situation. I mean, especially in the fifth inning, that's still early. That's not. I mean, if you're talking about the eighth inning and you got a runner on second base, and depending on who you have at the plate, if you got a base open on at first, that's situational. You know, okay. I mean, so you can't say, oh, I'm going to do this, you know, because if it's somebody that, you know, that I've gotten out or you know, I'm just going to go right after him, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go after this. And then sometimes even in situations where I feel pretty confident, like if there's a guy up at the plate, I know that he can hurt me, I'm still going to go after him.
Okay.
So there's sometimes I'll pitch around, you know, kind of like be careful with a guy. Sometimes I go after him.
Yeah,
so it's situational.
It depends on the swings you've seen and what
your
catcher thinks. And
or like, how I feel that
how
day.
How you feel.
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
There are days when things aren't, your command is less
exactly.
than it could be.
Exactly.
In which case, you're probably not pitching in the eighth inning anyway.
Well, exactly.
Okay, probably they're going to bring a fresh arm in there anyway. So.
All right, bud. Okay, well, thank you very much for your insight, and I don't think we're going to rip you too much, but it's a pleasure having you on the show again.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Take care, bud.
Okay, buddy. Thank you. Have a good one, man.
I will.
Yeah. Hey.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Thanks for being on the show for, I was guessing, the sixth time. But
I don't think it's six times, but I know I've interviewed him twice.
Okay, so this is probably the third time, so maybe the fifth time.
Okay, all right. I knew it was a lot, but yeah.
I think we had him after the Japan series last year, so. Okay, so, well, what did you, what would you like to comment on Mr. Standridge, who might become a philosopher after this?
I'd like to comment on everything, but we don't have enough time.
Neither did he.
But I tell you this, I love Jason Standridge. I love him. I mean, I remember the first time we had him on the show, he had some wild comment, and I kept repeating it after the interview. Compared to some of his past JBW chats, I think this one was pretty mild, but he sounded like the really grizzled veteran that he looks like.
Yeah.
You know, he actually sounded like a guy who's been around now. I mean, before, he was a guy always, we've talked to him, he's been close to 30 since he's been in Japan, but now he talks like a guy who's got all that life experience and game experience, and it was a vastly different Jason on our show, at least.
Interesting.
I like how he stressed the aspect of enjoying the experience while competing, because, you know, he stressed that aspect of wanting to compete and wanting to win, but he didn't say it, but it's so difficult for pitchers to show that all-out effort because he doesn't get a chance to run to first base and head slide and dive into the dirt and say, look at my effort level. See how high it is?
That's very good. I mean, that's really, I mean, you nailed that one.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't get a chance to do that, but he lets you know that he's very serious about winning, but that it's not all about baseball. And look, you know better than most people, I wake up with MLB games in the morning. I'll even wake up in the middle of the night to watch something if I need to, and I don't have to write about it like you do. And then I go to sleep with MPB at night. There's nobody who watches as much baseball as I do, I don't think. If you do, let me know. Unless you're in one of those fan caves in the States, then I can't compete with you. But otherwise, because I have a life. But anyway. but
I think we just heard about your life. I think maybe we'll have one of those Twitter polls. You know, does John have a life? Yes, no.
Hashtag hi.
But, yeah, I mean, in the end, it is only baseball, okay? And that's the way he expresses, you know, winning and losing is part of the game. You can't always win, and you don't always lose. But in the end, you go home, and you have a family, and those people love you. So I thought that was really beautiful. And then I also liked the aspect of him saying that he doesn't try to micromanage on the mound. But I'm going to have to correct him about what he said about men and our inability, he said, men struggle in multitasking, and I totally disagree. And I'll set him straight so that he doesn't spread this bad.
Well, I told him, be careful. It's true for him, I suppose, and it's true for me. So, but I don't think we're a suitable sample size for the male gender.
Well, I'll tell you what men do, and just so the other
men out there. Educate me, man.
I will educate all you guys so that you realize what you're doing. When compared to women, they like to multitask, but they're not goal-oriented. Men like to have something completed and move on to the next project. We're project and goal-oriented. So while we multitask, we do it all the time. We multitask just as well as women. But we like to complete a task and then move on because we like to stack the bricks. Men are brick stackers, basically what I'm saying. We like to see the walls going up. We like to see something completed and finished and done. Whereas women can multitask and not get anything done better over a longer period of time because they have more patience than men. So we're good at multitasking. We do multitask all the time as men, as women, but I think we have different goals in mind and short-term goals and long-term goals, and they're just different. So don't go spreading that rumor, Mr. Standridge. We are good multitaskers. We can do it. We are men. We are strong. Huh?
Hear us roar.
Yes. Henry Reddy, we are, not Helen.
That's right. Just call us Hank.
So that's what, you know, those things were the things that most stood out for me. What about you?
Well, obviously, it's really, you know, Jason's tough because it's really hard to pry thoughts out of him.
He's like a bottle of Coca-Cola that you shake up. All you have to do is pop one question and you spray for days.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, if you don't have a microphone, watch out. You know, you're in trouble. But if you turn it on, I guess if it wasn't working, he'd probably repeat it all for me.
Right.
I don't know. It's this hawk thing that's going on. You know, as I've said before, Dennis Sarfati is like that. He'll be waiting for taking his very precious time and waiting for me to interview him, you know, when he keeps doing something valuable. And I really respect, I appreciate it. I'm so thankful for that. Now, I think he's enjoying the game and it's still fun. That wasn't a big surprise for me, but, I was thinking about his answer to how, you know, your responsibilities change. You know, when did you realize that this game is a business? One of the things when you talk to guys who are coming here to play in NPB is, you know, baseball, at the end of the day, baseball is a business and they have to provide for their families or they have to provide for the future or they have to look out for their career. Mm. You know, it's a looking out for number one move. So it's not that uncommon to hear, but as I was curious at what point, and Jason's answer was interesting to me because I asked his former manager with the Hawks, Kimiyasu Kudo, about this in January when Kudo was elected to the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Now, Kudo is famous, at least on the podcast and at least with me, for his interest in sports science.
Right.
He's been working on his a graduate degree in sports science, I believe at Tsukuba University. And he's been telling me about this stuff for about the past 10 years. And I said, well, I know you're interested. When did it start? You know, when did this fascination with getting the maximum out of your body begin? He said, pretty much after I got married and I realized I wasn't in this for myself anymore.
Mm.
I had a wife I had to look after. You know, I couldn't just break down. I couldn't just allow myself to be injured because somebody did the wrong thing or somebody told me the wrong thing or somebody didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
So it was a matter of him of taking control so he could provide for his family. So I thought that was kind of interesting what Jason said, because your priorities change.
With the family, yeah.
With the family, indeed. And I did like the other comment he made about stop worrying about how the results fall. You know, what happens after you throw the pitch. You know, take care of what you can before you throw the pitch and you know, and where you're covering the, you know, cover going to the field to be an infielder and covering the bases and such. But, you know, do your work and get over it.
Yeah, and that's what I meant by in terms of trying to micromanage on the mound and worry about the goals and the end game. He's just worried about doing his job and doing the best he can. And after that, you know, there's only so much you can do. Mm. And as a pitcher, I used to talk to Mark Kroon about it all the time. And remember, he had a stretch where he joined the Giants and was perfect in save opportunities. And he said, well, one day it's going to end because there's nothing I can do once I let go of the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, if they hit it back to me, the most I can do is field. If they hit it to the first base side, I can go over there and cover first, but that's about all I can do.
Mm.
And if I throw a bad pitch and it doesn't come back, you know, I just got to throw a better one next time. And then Daisuke Miura of the Bay Stars told me that once in an interview where he said, look, if I don't get guys out or if I give up a couple hits in a run, my job is to get the next guy out if I'm still out there on the mound. And I've got to work as hard as I can to get the next guy out. And if I give up consecutive hits and four hits or five hits in a row, I still got to focus on getting that next guy out. And that's all I'm focused on. And so, yeah, you know, don't try to micromanage. Don't try to say, hey, look, I should have done this. I should have done that. I need to do this better. I need to think about mechanics. As Randy Messenger once told us on the show, hey, you know, if I'm out there on the mound thinking about mechanics, I can't get guys out.
Mm.
So just train, get ready for the game, throw, and go home.
Well, Hiroshi Gondo, the former manager of the Bay Stars, once said, you can think and you can hit, but hitting and thinking are two different things, and they shouldn't be – you shouldn't confuse the two.
Don't try to marry him either.
Yeah, indeed. So yeah, it was fun, and I want to thank Jason again for being patient with us his time. Although I think he enjoyed it, and I always enjoy seeing him. He did say something. It was the second time I talked to him this year, and we were talking about the Hawks, his old team, and he had something to say, which I'll add here. Was, you know, they say you can never have too much pitching, but I think the Hawks have too much pitching.
Which is what we say all the time.
Right. And he said that in a sense that it was unfair to so many guys on that team that, you know, they're guys on the farm team who will rarely see, who could be on a 28 man roster with another team.
Yeah.
But they can't because they're with the Hawks.
Exactly. And one thing that, sounds like you're done, but the one thing I wanted to mention too about his comments was, and I know we have this impression of the Hanshin Tigers being really uptight.
Right.
But he really...
Why we have that?
He confirmed it for sure. I mean, his comment is saying about their response to a loss as it being comparable to a loss in Game 7 of the series.
Right.
Man, we got a game tomorrow, man, and we got 100 more after that.
I know.
What a beautiful reaction.
Well, I thought that was... Now that you mentioned that, I was really kind of interested in that, and I thought I guess we could, if we boiled it down to a simple phrase for each team, is really good and knows it,
mm-hmm.
really good but is afraid to show it,
mm-hmm.
and really good but doesn't know it. So his thing with the Marines was, you know, these guys got to learn how good they actually are. Whereas the Tigers, they're good, but they could be better because they're not as good as they should be because they're worried about things. And I've heard that Matt Merton told me about the whole every day, the Tigers, before they went out for practice, the team would lay out the papers for everybody to read what the newspapers were writing about them.
Oh no.
That was their part of their pregame warm and watching the pregame shows on TV while they're waiting to go out and stretch and having the announcers say, well, you know, so-and-so is not doing very well and the Tigers really have to depend on him, but it seems like they can't, you know, and this is, oh great, I'm in the starting lineup today and no one can depend on me.
Oh no. Yeah. Yeah. He kind of confirmed that for me. So, I mean, and we've seen it and we've talked about trying to talk to Hanshin players or talking to the PR, the very unhelpful PR staff. And
well, they're unhelpful, but they're also a part of that pressure, you know, that sort of pressure dome thing. You know, they're in that under pressure to keep order in that zoo. I don't think I get along pretty well with the guys, but they just buckle under pressure.
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, we can't let you do your job because that would be not letting me do my job. My job is to keep you from doing your job.
Well, talking about doing the job, the Marines have been doing the job so far through about 6 or 7 weeks here in the opening part of the season. And I like where they're at. I like where they're headed. I saw one of the bloggers today. I follow two of them, so I'm not sure which one it was. But he said, hey, the Marines are in second place and the Hawks are doing well, but you know, they're in a good place to catch them in the second half or something to that effect. And I'm like, it's May. Everybody just settle down. It is still May. One team we knew the Hawks were going to at some point explode and they have, and they were going to be up near the top of the standings and they are, but you know, the Marines are right there with 20 victories. Both teams have 20 victories. It's just that the losses are completely different. Not completely different.
Yeah, I guess I got news for you. The Orcs Buffaloes are poised to make a run for it.
Yeah, a 6-game winning streak for them, and they'd be right in the thick of things. In fact, they were up. They're still in fourth place, which is – I don't look at standings. I always say that, but they had been in last
place. Hold on, let me get that sentence right again.
I'm sorry. I don't look at standings this early in the season.
They're in fourth place, but I don't look at standings this early. What am I missing in that sentence?
Oh, stop it. I don't look at the standings and take them seriously this early.
Okay,
okay,
got it. You don't worry about the standings.
No, who cares? I mean, everybody's pretty close anyway. Like I said, a 5-6-game winning streak could put you in first place in some instances, maybe in the Central League for sure. But anyway, The difference right now is the loss column and the win column, and even the Buffaloes are 6 victories behind SoftBank, which is not insurmountable by any means. So all they have to do is find their feet and get hot. But anyway, the Marines, they've been looking. Find their feet. Yes, they're missing.
I think
their feet are missing.
The Buffaloes find their feet. They aren't going to like what they see.
Hashtag high heat.
So what has impressed you the most about the Marines? For me, I think I didn't expect overall the starting pitching to be what it is. I expected them to score runs. I didn't think they'd play defense the way that would keep them in the race. And what I mean by that, and I think we talked about before we actually started taping, when I said their defense is probably not that good and that they have a bunch of DHs on the field, which included, say, Inoue. All right, he hasn't been playing recently, but anyway, I'm saying that these guys don't make a lot of plays that could be made by good players, like a ground ball that just sneaks through the infield, or a play where they get the glove on the ball, but they don't actually make it into an out. And they've had their share of those kinds of plays. I don't really worry about errors too much because they happen to everybody. Although, you know, you can have good hands and actually get to balls, but then have a bad throw or be off balance or something. So I'm not so much worried about the errors. It's the balls that get through. It's the plays that don't get made. It's the bad choices on fielder's choice plays that I've been seeing scores run on. But I'm sorry, runs score on. But what has impressed you so far with this
team? Well, I'm going to stick with that topic because it is interesting, and I guess I've noticed it before. Now, I did not know that Jermaico Navarro was a second baseman. I just assumed here's a big Dominican and he's a first baseman. So, I think that was part. Now, I know the Marines did not offer Luis Cruz a contract, and I'm guessing this is the scenario. Now, the Marines traded out in essence. Whether willfully or not, I don't think they were eager to let Toshiaki Imai go, but they let a very good third base fielder at third base go for a guy who's a pretty good hitter, Kei Hosoya, who really could never crack the Marines lineup for year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then they let Luis Cruz go, and I'm thinking the reason for that was Jermaico Navarro. Oh, if he can play second base, we're going to have even more offense. So now they've got 3 guys. Now, I haven't seen Navarro play second base very much. I've been at one game when he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he can hit like all heck. So they've got a lot of guys. You know, they made those 2 switches in the infield. So I think their infield defense is not going to be as good. Is it really horrible? No. No, it's not. It's not Oryx, where I think if you put the ball in play as much as it was last year, at this time of the year, Oryx, I think if you put the ball in play, you had almost a 50% chance of reaching base.
Yeah, I remember we talking about that, and then I asked Luis Cruz about it. He's like, huh? What? I don't know about that, but we're playing hard.
Okay. But against the Marines, no, they're not bad. They're not terrible, but they're not great either.
Right.
But again, they do have, you know, they have made those offensive upgrades, and they got Alfredo Despain and playing as a DH,
yeah.
And Iguchi's come back and hit. So the run scoring has not been the problem. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, their pitching has been, as you said, better than expected. I think the middle relief is, it's nothing surprising. I mean.
Well, I want to get to the relievers in a little while.
Okay. Why don't you get to the relievers then?
The guy I want to talk about, or the thing I want to talk about, is the rotation. And that starts with Hideaki Wakui.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I would say about him is he has been stubbornly effective this year.
Mm.
He's given up a lot of base runners, but he hangs in, he battles, he keeps the runs to a minimum. Ayumu Ishikawa has been good.
Mm-hmm.
He has only made 4 starts, but he's been pretty good. Today, I think the starter was Yuta Omine, and he's had his troubles. And I believe the skipper said last week that this was going to be his last chance. I don't know if they're actually going to send him down. But Yuki Karakawa made a reemergence, and he put in a quality start on Saturday, I think it was. So, or maybe that was Friday. But this kid, Kota Futaki, the 20-year-old, has been a big surprise. I don't think any of us really saw him coming. So they've got a rotation that's going to be able to hold up for the most part. And then it was interesting that I had this exchange, and this is why I love talking to some of the fans and some of the bloggers on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, it's been a bad week for the Marines bullpen. And I said, weak? Because in my head, I had just seen them come in, different guys, different situations, give up, you know, whatever. And that's when I sent the email to you earlier this evening. I said, do you have the number on the Marines' inherited runners who have scored? Because the guy, he tweeted back, well, their ERAs combined are this, and they lead the league. And I'm like, well, that might be true. And they, as a relief corps, the Marines are 7-2. So how many of those, I was trying to look it up, and I couldn't find all of them. I was going to have to go through all the games, but how many of those games are a reliever giving up some runs and then walking away with a win? I'd have to say, since the league average is 5 wins, I think it is, I would have to say maybe 2 of those games.
Okay.
Perhaps, but then, and then they have 2 losses. But I thought, well, here's what disappears is when you give up inherited runners, that goes on the starting pitch or the previous pitcher's ERA, not yours. But you've already done the damage by giving up a hit. And I remember a couple instances where that happened. I don't know if they ended up losing the games or not, but their ERAs look good. So, I mean, I just remember what Ken Katakura, Mr. Ken Katakura said to me a long time ago, which was there's a lot of different ways to look at baseball. And so I think when you're a fan and when you're in the media, you kind of take a different view of it. And my impression of their bullpen was, they're okay. I don't really, I mean, I don't see anybody. I think Dennis Sarfati is probably it this year because Yuki Matsui with the Eagles hasn't really been great.
Yeah, he was very effective at the start of the season, and I haven't seen him be as effective recently.
Recently, right. I think Dennis Sarfati is, as far as shutdown guys in the Pacific League, is the only one.
I would say that is correct. I know Hiroshi Masa's been having trouble with his splitter all year. I know that the Lions don't really know who their closer is. Hirano.
If you see him on the street, please direct him to the stadium entrance.
I would say they don't know where he is. I said they don't know which guy is the closer. The lefty Takahashi's had injury issues. The Marines have several they've got Yuji Nishino, who's by and large effective, but he's been largely ineffective at times.
Right.
So, yeah, good question. We know who Matsui, we know Matsui and Masui and Sarfati and Hirano, but two teams are sort of like going, well, we don't really know who our closer is. If you can point him out to us, we'll be happy.
Yeah, none of those guys is a real shutdown guy who, strikes fear. I mean, I remember talking to players who are like, yeah, great, I got to face the closer in the ninth inning. Great, I got a chance. And I don't feel like there's anybody except for Sarfati who guys think, oh, man, I hope I don't have to face that guy. I think they feel pretty confident about everybody else in the Pacific League. So, I think, like you said, they're okay. The bullpen has been okay and for the large part effective. All right. So thank you again to Jason, and we appreciate it. And we're watching in amazement. For me, it's amazement. But after seeing these guys hit, and they all hit, even they brought Shunichi Nemoto up, and he's been hitting, and Shohei Kato has been hitting, and Shogo Nakamura, they're all hitting. So that lineup is going to produce a lot of runs, even without the power. So I'm not concerned about that. If I were a fan, I would just be worried about how long can the rotation hold up like this and the bullpen. Other than that, I think they're going to be able to compete. Definitely look like a playoff team at this point in the season, but it's still May.
Okay.
All right. Making a seamless transition. there was a play, and Jim calls Jim called the umpires lame for this play, but there's a play, I think it was on Friday night at Cebu Dome. In a game between the Fighters and the Lions, Daiki Asama was trying to score from second base on a wild pitch, and Kona Takahashi was the pitcher. And there were many moving parts to this play.
Correct.
But anyway, the umpire originally called Asama out.
The home plate umpire.
Home plate umpire called him out.
Manabe.
Manabe.
Yep. Manabe, yeah.
Okay, he called him out, but the play was reviewed, and the collision rule that they've started to enforce this year was implemented
to
determine that Mr. Takahashi was standing in the wrong place with the ball.
Yep. Now, We've had a lot of discussion about this, and I think I missed part of the memo, and I think I missed it just partly out of arrogance.
Well, that wouldn't be the first time.
No, it wouldn't be. I doubt if it'll be the last.
But you tweeted that I was right. You tweeted that out. I was so surprised.
Well, you were right, and I was. And let me break this down. First of all, I'll try to do this as succinctly as possible. For years, MLB and NPB ignored the rule that says explicitly in the rules, catchers cannot be in the baseline without the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It just says that. It says catchers. It says no fielder can be in the baseline without the ball.
Okay.
And but there's a phrase that says this especially applies to catchers too,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was always interesting since they were allowed to do this in NPB and MLB. But the rules were there and they were obviously ignored because that's the way the game is played. Like many rules in baseball are ignored. So the catchers were allowed to sit there and camp in the baseline or cover the entirety of home plate without the ball. And then while they're squatting, you know, allow to catch the ball on a hop, you know, use their whole body to block the ball and hang on and often not even tag the runner. This was great in Japan because unless the runner was a foreigner, it was very unlikely that they were going to get, you know, basically an elbow to the head. normally the Japanese runner would slide politely into their shin guards and then the ball would arrive sometimes after the runner had already arrived and was sitting on the baseline. And then tagged out. I've seen it dozens of times. I mean, I'm not kidding. The guy's just sitting there waiting to be tagged out and here comes the ball, you know, and he beat the throw by 10 feet and he's out at home.
Okay.
So the majors have said, no, we're going to enforce the rule. Now that rule is now being enforced in Japan, and basically, and Yahoo Sports in Japan also got it wrong because when they explained the collision rule on Saturday in an article about the play at Seibu Dome,
mm-hmm.
they said they have taken the American rule and you're not allowed to block the ball, block the base, or block the baseline without the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyway, that was what I was thinking. Okay, so if you have the ball in America, you can block the play. If you have the ball in your possession, you can charge down the runner, you can stand in the base path, you can do whatever you want to tag him out. And that was my understanding. You know, that it was like any other base. Well, I was completely and 100% wrong. John was right. Because he's going, hey, wait a second. That's not what it sounds like they're saying. Okay, so on Saturday I called Osamu Ino, who's the head of NPB's umpiring technical committee, and who also sits on Japanese baseball's rules committee. Now, this is above NPB. This establishes the rules for all baseball in Japan, amateur and professional.
Right.
Okay. Now he said, interestingly enough, we thought about applying the MLB rule, but we felt that if there was a loophole allowing the catchers to block the plate, if they had the ball, then they would just block the plate and gradually they would encroach until they were blocking the plate without the ball.
Okay.
They would basically do what they were always taught to do. And then we would have collisions, and our focus was on not having collisions. Right. So they actually did have a new rule, which I've been laughing at because they call the whole package the new rule, but only half of it is new, which is this part.
It's still misconstrued and misrepresented in the press.
Right. What is new is that it is now obstruction if you have the ball in the near home plate in the baseline. Unless you are actually there going to catch the ball, then you are allowed to be there. we've had that case already once this year.
And that's the debate that we brought up. I think it was the play. It was Oryx and
Nippon Ham.
Yeah.
It was Sho Nakata. Yeah, and he gave an elbow to the chest of Oryx catcher Katsumi Yamazaki.
And at that time, I said I thought that they should have basically said that, you know, Shota had nowhere to go, and that the catcher was moving into his way into the line, and
right.
We had the long debate. Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, and that one, okay, now and I see what's going on, and I understand. So I talked to Mr. Ino, and he said, no, in Japan, we don't want any collisions. We don't want the players to get hurt. He said the union didn't want the players to get hurt. And he said, but because of the Japanese national character, and I quote, if we left a door open for them to block the plate, they would.
Yeah.
So we took that avenue away from them because we don't want collisions. Now, this is completely different from the MLB, so that was really interesting. Now, the play at Cebu Dome, as I've watched this thing about two dozen times now, is the pitcher, the bases are loaded, there are no outs. The pitcher throws a wild pitch that bounds away from the catcher and to the third base dugout, in front of the third base dugout. The catcher runs to get it.
He loafs to get it.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
And,
okay.
And Mr. Takahashi loafed to home plate thinking that Asama wouldn't come. But yes, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, he was there plenty of time for Asama. Asama was out by 10 feet. Anyway, Brandon Laird, the runner on third, scores, and Asama never stops. He sees where Sumitani is. He hasn't even gotten the ball yet.
Because he's loafing.
Mm-hmm. He's loafing, okay? And he comes in. Now, Sumitani was loafing, but he still had plenty of time to throw him out. Now, what happened was Kona Takahashi, the pitcher, is left foot is on home plate. His right foot is on the infield side of home plate, and he's waiting for the ball. Okay, he's standing there when Brandon Laird runs past him, and then he's standing there when Asama's coming to the plate. Now, he's not guilty of blocking the plate, because he's not blocking, he's standing on the plate. You know, he could have touched the plate around his foot.
Well, had a path. The runner still had a path to the plate.
Right. Well, again, blocking the plate means you can't, you know, he has the plate sealed off. You know, you can't actually see the plate. So that was not the case. And he wasn't in the baseline, so no problem. Now he catches the ball, and again, no problem. He's standing there with the ball. Now, if he stayed where he was, no problem. But because Asama is now hitting the dirt about 5 feet from home plate, he starts moving toward him. He puts his left foot in the baseline.
That's Takahashi.
And Takahashi to tag out the runner who's now coming at him on the ground. He tags him out clearly ahead of the plate. He's called out. Now, here's the problem. Had he moved his right foot towards the runner, which would have been difficult, but if he had moved his right foot and kept his left foot on the base, he would have been okay. But as soon as his left foot was standing in the baseline, they said, nope, you're in the baseline, you got the ball, the runner's safe. Because we can't have a collision because you're obstructing the runner, because we don't want you there with the ball.
Right, and I think when we had this debate early on, when I talked to you about the Buffalo Spiders play, I said that the wording was, at all costs, you have to avoid collisions or something. Or
right.
The only way you can have a collision at the plate is if it's absolutely unavoidable. I don't know how you end up in that situation. If you're trying to tag a guy out and you're diving at him and you actually happen to crash into him, I don't know how that's unavoidable, but they're going to determine it maybe by video to make sure you're not in the base path or something like that. But yeah, in this particular play, the guys on Proyaku News, they said they held up Takagi held up two books, and he says there's an agreement in the Pacific League, there's an agreement in the Central League, and some of the other guys said, well, we're going to have plays like this all season long, and nobody's really going to know exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other guys complained, hey, you know, when I played, all the umpires' rulings were final, so that's how we played baseball, and now you got these people looking at replays and determining where people are standing and all this kind of stuff. It's craziness.
Mm. Well, going back to the one, you know, where the what there was the contact. I think with the there was not really although Takahashi caught Asama's spike on his chin and he was dripping blood when he came off the field. It wasn't a collision. He was just there making a tag.
Yeah, that
it was a typical infield tag at a base, which is why to me it's very lame, because if it was third base, nobody would bat an eye.
You always say that, but I always say, hey, look, people are stopping at third base. They're stopping they stop at second and third, but they're not stopping at home. Everybody's running through it.
We have a philosophical disagreement about that. So let's just skip it for the time. I don't see if we can resolve that. But what I'm saying is that for generations, they've treated home base as if it wasn't a base, as if no rules applied, because they didn't apply the rules. And now they've applied more rules than they did anywhere else, which I find ironic. Okay, so let's just say that. Now, to go back to the bit about Nippon Ham and Oryx as we brought it up, the ruling that they checked the video replay was to see whether Nakata had illegally smashed into the catcher. And they said no, because the catcher was there in the baseline getting the ball.
Which I disagreed with.
Which I agreed with. I don't care if you disagreed with it.
I'm just pointing that out.
Okay. I mean, you don't care if I agreed with it. So that's fine. It doesn't matter either way. But the ruling was that the catcher was there getting the ball, which I understood, and that he was in the baseline. And so Nakata was perfectly justifying in giving him an elbow to the chest, which it was.
And again, I didn't think it was an elbow to the chest. I think he looked up and said, who's this idiot in my way? All of a sudden I had a pass to the base and now I don't, or to home plate and now I don't. And it was a natural reaction. I don't think it was an elbow.
Well, he didn't flinch. I gave him an elbow anyway.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, so that's the way it is. The rule is, and I'll, my final thought about this, and having thought about it to some degree, is I actually like this. And I like it for the reason that, unlike MLB, where they want to avoid collisions, but they can't say they want to avoid collisions, because collisions are a sacred part of baseball. So we can't eliminate collisions, because that would be eliminating a quote-unquote sacred part of baseball. So what we want to do is have collisions within a very, very, very tiny within these very specified parameters, then it's okay to clean the guy's clock and send him to the hospital.
Controlled chaos.
Exactly. But in Japan, they're saying, no, the purpose is not to have collisions. And they're not having the media crash down on them, because Japanese media is like 1984. Oh, yes, nobody broke the rules before. Everything is – this is a new rule, not an old rule. You know. So,
okay. All right.
But I like the idea that they're coming out straight in front and saying – we don't want collisions. We don't want interference at second base. Fine. Let's not have it. That's the rules. Everybody play by the rules.
All right. All right. A four-seam transition. We're going to talk about the Bunting Tigers. Now, you had brought this up before about how they had more sacrifice bunts than – I'm sorry, sacrifice flies than bunts.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to talk about it on the show. And I think the league average through Saturday was for sacrifice bunts. 19, and Hanshin had the fewest with 12, and the Giants led the Central League with 27. So that's the biggest disparity that I can remember in a while. But the Tigers,
what occurred to me was that I'd never seen a team have more sacrifice flies than bunts, and it's never happened. The closest we ever had was the 1994 Dye Hawks, who had five more sacrifices than they had five more sacrifice bunts than sacrifice flies. They're kind of famous because their manager didn't like bunting. The manager didn't like bunting, but 25 years ago, you couldn't say you didn't like bunting. it was verboten. It was like, you don't say that. If you say it you're like, going to be ostracized. So what he said was, oh, the only number two hitter I got is a slugger. I'm sorry. I apologize to the baseball gods for this affront to orthodoxy. I'm not kidding. He actually had to like apologize for having a number two hitter who wasn't a bunter, who didn't bunt the entire season.
Right.
So now we've got Hanshin and we've got Yakult, who are not using their position players to bunt.
Mm-hmm.
The Tigers, until a week ago, the Tigers had not bunted with a position player before the seventh inning. which sounds very much like Major League Baseball.
Right.
Okay. The Swallows had done once. Now, I think they've each done once now. The Tigers and Swallows have yet to bunt in the first inning this year.
Good.
When is the last time you've ever heard this?
I'm really keen
to talk to Tom O'Malley about this, but I asked Mitsuru Monaco, the Swallows manager, on Wednesday, and he said, look, I always thought sacrifice bunting, you know, in the first inning by the number two guy, waste of time. I don't need it. Everybody knew we were going to do it. Nobody's bugging me. He said the reporters are not on him. Nobody seems to care.
Excellent.
Tomotaka Sakaguchi, their new leadoff hitter, I asked him, did it kind of take you by surprise when they're not sacrificing when you get on first base? He says, yeah, it was weird, but they told me it was going to happen in camp, so I was ready for it.
Mm.
the runner on first base has got to be mentally prepared for the lack of a sacrifice because he's been brainwashed to expect it.
That's right. They have to send him to mini camp just for, you know, strategy mini camp, just
indeed,
to let him know what's going to happen. Hey, we're not going to bunt.
But just to let you know, the third team, that has bunted in the first inning, but very sparingly, is Mr. Koichi Ogata's Hiroshima Carp.
Hmm.
So there you go. The three teams who look like they know what they're doing.
Oh, all right.
The Tigers, the Swallows, and the Carp. Good going, guys.
The rest of you guys get with the program. All right,
learned to read what the program is.
We got some notes. Okay, Ricardo Nanita of the Chunichi Dragons extended his hitting streak to 19 games as of Sunday, and he's hitting .364, but he doesn't yet have enough at-bats to qualify in the batting race, so he's got to keep playing, get some more starts, and he'll be up there soon, I think. At .364, I think he would be second in the league behind Brad Eldred, who's hitting .374 and leading the league, tied for the league lead in home runs with Tetsuto Yamada with 12. So that's cool. And then the posting system, I saw Jim tweet something this past week that there will be no changes in the posting system. So I guess my little conspiracy theory about Shohei Ohtani goes out the window, the one where I said I think they changed the posting system and he might go after this season.
Oh yeah, John was speculating that the fighters might be having their two weeks of spring camp in Arizona to showcase Ohtani so they could sell him to the highest bidder.
Yeah, I guess that's out. So I guess he's going to stay and play again next year. So good.
Yeah. So yeah, Toshimasa Shimada, the chief executive of the fighters, said basically, no, we want to keep him. And he said, I asked him, was there a contract? I asked him, was there an agreement to post him? He said, no, he doesn't want to go. But the key reason he stayed with the fighters instead of going to America was because he knew an American team wouldn't let him hit.
And pitch.
Well, they wouldn't let him hit. They would want him to, no, here's your, no, leave your bats in Japan. We don't want to see him. But with the fighters, he said, we'll let him hit and pitch. And he said, he's just eating it up. He just loves it. He's having the best time of his life right now.
Not so much today, but yeah.
Well, not today, but Shimada said that he might change his mind about being posted and moving to the majors if he thinks there are several teams that would be interested in using him as both a hitter and a pitcher.
Okay. All right, you hear that, Dodgers?
It's a whole other can of worms, man. Not the Dodgers.
All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one is kind of a holdover from last week. It comes from @CostaFreak, and it's via Twitter. And he says, what are your thoughts on the two fighters' trades with the Bay Stars and Giants this season? #high heat. The Giants picked up left-handed pitcher Masahiro Inui from the Fighters on April 12th.
In exchange for Susumu Orui, who's an infielder.
Okay. And they traded right-handed pitcher Yoshiaki Fujioka to the Bay Stars.
Well, they sold him.
All right. Yes. You, come here.
That's right.
Come here, property.
Exactly.
I'm putting you over here.
Okay, Yoshiaki Fujioka, let's start with him. He's a 31-year-old journeyman pitcher. He's pitched quite a lot in his career, but of no real success. I don't know what else to say about him. Susumu Orui is 25-year-old, so he has a chance to get better, but he has shown no ability to hit in the minors. So how much better he could possibly be is a fairly difficult question.
Yeah, I'm just kind of puzzled by this question myself. A lot of fringe guys out there, and I think it's fringe guy for fringe guy in both situations. And the Bay Stars, they're trading for a pitcher. It makes sense, but this guy, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're looking for a guy who won't.
But sometimes trades are made for personal reasons. The guy says, "Look, I've heard this case. People had family issues that they wanted to be closer to home,
mm-hmm.
or they wanted to be close to their wife's parents' home, or there are sometimes issues, personal reasons, and the guy's not a big star, so let's just move him. Let's find accommodate him. That happens quite a bit."
Yeah.
Or we don't think we're going to use you a lot, but this other team is interested, so let's go there. So, these aren't big names, but I don't see any sort of team reasons for acquiring these guys.
I was thinking maybe the Fighters made a move like this to get rid of two pitchers so they can make more room for the Handkerchief Prince, whom they brought up this past week.
Okay.
And he threw in a game, so in a winnable game, no less. I was like, what are you guys doing? I thought we weren't going to have to see this guy anymore.
Well, he's been surprised. He's gotten better because he used to be just complete and total rubbish, and now he's had games where he was actually pretty good, so. I mean, he had, at the end of the season last year, he had some games in which he was actually useful. So I was glad to see that.
Okay. All right. The next question is an MP3 from Nija Gambare on Twitter.
Hi, Jim. Hi, John. This is Yuko from Nagoya City. As you can guess, I'm a big fan of Chunichi Dragons, but today, this is my question. What do you guys think of the future of NPB? I think it would be better if they add four more teams with no limitations on falling players. Four more teams put into four divisions in two leagues. Then the top two teams in each division would have a playoff. Well, this plan is a little bit advanced or radical, but it's keeping the current 12-team format okay for NPB. I really enjoy your podcast every week. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much.
Great to hear your voice. That's our first Japanese listener who has sent in an MP3. So, Nija, thank you very much. It's good to hear your voice. And she's from Nagoya, so I used to live in Showa Ward near Gokiso Station and also in Chikusa.
Okay, so the sharpen. I should get out my Google Maps now. So yeah, well, what do you think? Four new teams?
I think that's a really tall order.
Mm.
And we had this question before, basically. I think it was last year sometime. And the fact that we keep getting it makes me think that the listeners and the fans are antsy and they want something new. They're tired of looking at the same teams and the same matchups, and it does. Just imagine what it was like in the 70s, 80s, and 90s when the monotony of playing all these teams over and over and over, same matchups, same pitching matchups, 1 week after you face a team at home, you face them on the road, and it's the same two guys throwing. But we're talking about Japan, where the suggestion of change, just the suggestion, takes about 10 to 20 meetings to decide on the definition of change.
Yeah.
Hashtag high.
So I don't see it coming soon. And I like the radical plan, the four divisions and all that stuff. It sounds really cool. And no limits on import players, which I never see happening in Japan. Never, 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 no. Never.
No. Never.
But I think, honestly, the best thing that can happen right now is the teams can reach an agreement on third-level farm teams. Because right now, the Giants and SoftBank are the only teams, really, that have a third farm team, a Sangun team.
Although that's growing. I think that is growing. Of course, the Hawks need a third-level team because they have about 25 development players. They need to have one or else they'd have these guys out, like, hoeing weeds or something.
Or selling tickets because they have to put them to work, right?
Indeed.
So, I think if all the teams do that, I think we can start from there and maybe at some point some of these independent teams get either picked up or moved to another area where we could have teams. I think, but the beginning is to get more jobs, get more games, get more teams, and that way it can start to grow maybe organically. But if you just try to create four teams and new divisions and all that stuff, I think it would be a mess. I don't really see MPB jumping on that train right there.
Yeah, they'll find another mess to jump in for sure.
They'll make their own mess.
That's guaranteed. They don't have to worry about outsiders bringing in new ideas to mess them up. They'll do it on their own. Of course, what I'd love to see would be the BC Challenge League say, you know, we've had enough of playing second fiddle. We've got some pretty good places to play here. We can be another major league.
Ah.
Now that's what I'd like to see. And then we'd see some real interesting stuff. We'd see some fireworks. You know, if suddenly they said, well, you know, we're gonna lose, I forget who their big corporate sponsor. Let's say they found like five other big corporate sponsors. You know, people, companies with real money who don't have the kind of money to get into NPB, but have got money to pay for, you know, stadiums and facilities and players and they got some cities to pitch in because they want to have their, you know, their quote unquote major league teams. Let's have a rival league outside of NPB, and then let's see what happens. Then we'll have lots of change.
And you know what they could do is instead of trying to get TV contracts or cable TV contracts, they could do online streaming contracts.
Sure could.
And that would steal away from Central League because they don't have a league TV.
They could sell their product to the United States. They could sell it all over Asia in one big bang.
That would get the MPB's attention, wouldn't it?
Sure would. We would see some really good stuff. And see, what I would see that happening is, you know, MPB would be going nuts. Like, who said you could do this? You know, and it would just be wonderful. It would be wonderful chaos, and it would be the best thing that could ever happen for Japanese baseball. But, I don't see that happening because again, here's the change. Oh, we would be threatening NPB. We shouldn't be, people would look down on us. Well, of course, the media sure would. The media would say, because whatever NPB says, they says the media reports is gold. The owners say this. This league doesn't know what it's doing. League doesn't know what it's doing. Top in big print the next day in the newspaper. Yomiuri Shimbu would be a big supporter of the independent baseball.
Hashtag. High heat.
Yeah, right.
Junichi Shimbu, welcome.
There you go. All right, our next question is from Glenn in Tokyo, and he says, hope all is well. You've probably seen this type of thing a million times over, but I wondered what your experience has been with Japanese manager slash coach expectations of foreign players versus homegrown rookies slash established Japanese players.
What's your take, John?
His example was Matt Haig of the Hanshin Tigers being sent down to the farm while he was hitting .242 with one home run and slugging .339 with an OPB of .364 while other guys, OPS of .364 Ooh. With a number of other guys, and he listed a few Japanese players on the Hanshin Tigers who have been given the opportunity to play who aren't doing much better. Mm-hmm. So my take on it was, as I think it was Dr. Gail Hopkins you talked to before, and he said he played for the Carp in the 70s, and they said to him one day, hey, we want you to hit for more power. So he's tried to hit for more power, and his average fell. And then they said, hey, we want you to hit for average. Mm-hmm. And so his average went back up, but the power went down. And so I think the issue is, do we know the plan? And I've said this before, we always know the outcome when we watch the games, but we don't know the plan. Mm. Okay, do they want this guy to do X, or do they want him to do Y or Z? We don't know that. We just see him strike out, or we see him fail or have success. And so I don't think that's always possible to know what the expectations are. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for us to sit back and say, okay, well, he's hitting 242 with only one home run. Well, I would send him down too. But did they expect him to do that? Did they expect him to hit more home runs? I know James Romack at Yokohama, the expectations were for power because he hit a bunch of power. He hit a bunch of home runs in the minor leagues. But he's not doing that. So I think that's why he's not getting playing time, was sent down to the farm before. So, you know, we've seen it a lot, but most of the time we've seen the profile on the player who these teams bring over, and it's a guy they expect home runs from.
Typically, yes.
Typically. And that's been, and I mentioned how that's been changing in recent years. I think Nigel Morgan was a really good example of that, because here was a guy who really didn't hit for a lot of power in the States, probably could in Japan, especially at Yokohama, but I don't think that was the expectation, yet they brought him over, so I don't think we were looking for him to hit home runs. So it just depends on what their plan was for him, and I like Tom O'Malley, we want to talk to him, we want to get him on the show this year. We've had him on the past 2 years. Maybe when we get to Hanshin, we'll be able to ask him that.
Yeah, that is a good question, and I like your answer. I like your answer a lot. We don't know what the expectations are. Now, the other thing, are they held to different standards? Absolutely. You know, foreign players, more is expected of them simply for the reason Japanese players, A, are cheaper, and Japanese players, not always, will tend to be more low maintenance. You know, you don't have to buy them apartments. You don't have to do this for their families.
You don't have to assign them an interpreter to work after hours or before hours.
I mean, what's this? Your wife's having a baby? Get in here and get to work. You know, like, what's this? What's this? I want to go. I'm going to be a half hour late to the ballpark because my wife's having a baby nonsense. Be here on time. You know, okay. So they're more manageable in that respect. They're more of the team's, often more of the team's future. But I've also seen cases where, you know, where that does get, and I can't say it's racist, but it's sort of like, well, he's not Japanese, so we don't have to treat him the same. Or, you know, whatever the reason is, there's a lot of very oddball decisions. And I'm not going to go all Dave Wiggins and say, oh, we have to keep this guy because he was the RBI leader. We shouldn't have fired him. There was a column once written about the Kintetsu Buffaloes not re-signing Jim Traber because, you know, it must be bad because he was the Pacific League RBI leader. But the reason you don't re-sign Jim Traber is you've got a young Japanese kid who can do the job better, who doesn't cost as much.
Right.
Okay. It's obvious. Okay. But sometimes you see things like the case of Jeff Manto, who signed with the Yomiuri Giants as a third baseman. And after, I think, 4 games in which he looked absolutely terrible, the Giants decided he couldn't play third base in Japan. He would never be a success. So they replaced him with Shigeo Nagashima's son, who had spent 8 years by that time in the minor leagues and the first team, proving that he couldn't play in NPB. I mean, this is a guy who was there was no doubt at all that he could play. There was no question that he could not play. But they took a guy and gave him 4 games and then replaced him with a guy who'd played roughly 1,000 games in the minors and had nothing to show for it.
Okay.
You know, you get that weird stuff too, so.
Yeah, and the
answer is nobody knows.
Yeah, well, the other thing to remember is, and I would say this is, Jim said it at the end of last season, beginning of this season when Kanemoto took over as manager, that he stated that they were rebuilding, but that they weren't rebuilding. And so they have a mixed message going on there in the first place. And I would say that if they have a young player, and they've got a couple young players, Haraguchi being one of them,
Hojo
being another one, who have come out early and been successful. And I think if they have young guys who are going to have a little bit of success, I think they're going to play them because they're in a transition year, although they're not telling people that.
Yes, absolutely. And that was the trick that I missed, is that Kanemoto has been very quick. Anybody on the farm team, Kanemoto's a convert. You have to understand that in Kanemoto's day, when he was a rookie, a 22-year-old rookie, he had all the talent in the world, and he had a manager who said, well, you're kind of low on the pecking order. I'm not going to give you a chance.
Right.
and he didn't get to regular playing time until he was 27. And he's kind of going, he's on a mission. He's saying, I ain't going to let that happen to you guys. Anybody who plays well on the farm team, your chance is tomorrow. Join the team.
Okay. And anybody else who has a question, thank you for everyone who sent questions this week.
Yes.
Anyone else who has a question, send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat@JBWPodcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Talk to you next week.